It's women and girls.
We create.
The smart, powerful, creative, accomplished young women.
We can fight.
I'm here because of you. I'm here because girls like you inspire me. Unthinkable obstacles just to attend school. The measure of any society is how it treats its women and girls.
Buckle up, buttercups. It's another episode of Surly Voices here on WMNF Tampa 88.5. My name is Liz. I'm one of your hosts. And Amina and Donna will be joining me by Zoom this morning. We've got some hot tea, really, really boiling hot tea to spill. And we've got some important issues to discuss. So please join us and join the conversation. You can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text to 813-433-0885. And I see my surly co-hosts have joined us. How are you, Amina?
Good morning. I'm doing well. It's the start of Ramadan today, so I'm trying to fast.
Donna, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing good. Good.
Yeah. And so we're going to give the surly disclaimer way up top because, like I said, we got some boiling hot tea. And so the opinions expressed on Surly Voices are those of Surly Voices and not necessarily those of WMNF Tampa or any of its affiliates or employees or board members or anybody connected with it. So, yeah, Amina starts spilling tea last night around 10 o'clock. This municipal election has just gotten out of hand. Amina, would you like to tell us your tea?
Well, I feel like the story was already out there, so I was just regurgitating tea. But I guess the real story is just, at the end of the day, what I keep repeating is like to support independent journalism right
yes.
now, especially. But there was a story published in Florida Politics, and it was trying to tie. What is he? The chair of the Italian club?
Chair or board member? He's
something
a member,
like that.
Yeah, of the Italian club.
Either way, he's somebody in these political circles, like. Organized group circles, and he is also trying to rebrand, apparently, because he is going by a different name, and the man is a registered sex offender who was recently arrested because he failed to register and update that. But the story that was published in Florida Politics was trying to link Lynn Hertak, the candidate for city council, to this man. However, that same man is in the host committee for Mayor Castor's
right.
reelection campaign. He's in pictures, you know, hugging Mayor Castor's wife and her. Lynn's campaign had responded saying that she was introduced to him by Mayor Castor and that group. At the end of the day, if this man, anyone can donate to a campaign, for example.
Right.
Anyone can. And he is trying to tout himself as some kind of consultant as he's giving like unsolicited advice. Like if you give unsolicited advice to a campaign and you go and call yourself a consultant, technically you could do that, I guess. But anyway, my biggest issue is that you know, this story is trying to make it seem like there is something there with Lynn's campaign, but it's, you know, it's willfully ignoring all the information out there,
yes.
Which is this man possibly deceived multiple people about who he is. And if that's the case, right, then, you know, that story should be covered holistically and told in a way where it shows everyone that he's had connections with, not just one candidate,
right.
Because it's extremely one-sided. And if someone is, you know, to be clear, like having a registered sex offender involved in anything public service related is just nasty work, in my opinion. I mean, he needs to go. I don't know what kind of vetting systems these campaigns have or these boards or organizations have, but my God. So all that to say, I think that there are certain publications that certainly work in favor of other of campaigns, you know, certain campaigns.
Very much so. Yeah.
And I at the end of the day, for me, that's the real issue here is, you know, besides everything that's come out, it's deceiving voters. And, you know, not to say that I don't want it to seem like we're saying like, well, it's okay that this registered sex offender has ties to this person because he also has ties to this. That's not at all what this is about.
Right.
He needs to go, period.
Right. Yes.
I'm just saying that if this man was deceiving people, it probably was many people that he was trying to deceive. And some publications need to have more of a responsibility to, you know, tell that story.
Yeah. And until I saw the article that you sent last night, I was not aware how much of a birdcage liner Florida politics is. But when I saw that, because the first thing I do when I see something like that is I go into, you know, deep diving mode. And so this the author of this hit piece, Peter Scorch, makes it seem like, you know, she's well connected with this guy. Again, we're not advocating for sexual predators to be, you know, in any kind of public role. But if you look back, yeah, this is where history comes into play. If you look back at his other articles regarding Lynn Hertak, he wrote one on March 1st. Exploring Tampa City Council Member Lynn Hertak's ties to Democratic Socialists. I mean, that's, you know, he's using Republican phraseology to try to rile up the moderate Democrats, and he doesn't quite come out and call Janet Cruz Caster's mother-in-law. They have associations or there's,
right,
yeah, it's like, call it like it is, it's her mother-in-law, nepo mom, you know. And
he
so
said they have some familiar relations,
right? I mean, that's just dishonest. I mean, here's a nice story for you to write, Mr. Scorch. Write one about why Janet Cruz lost her Senate seat to a Republican and then decided instead of running for mayor or running for one of the other open city council seats, she ran against the one person, the one woman on the city council. And for those of you who are not familiar, Bill Carlson, Orlando Goodes, who's now been unelected, and Lynn Hertak are the ones who have caused issues with not just rubber stamping whatever the mayor wanted. So, yeah, it's, you know, Bill Carlson won his election. Orlando Goodes did not win his. And so this is the last of the triumvirate of opposition that has a seat. And let's talk about a little bit more about this Gio Fucarino. Or Donna, you have too many audios open. Gio Fucarino, AKA John, his actual name is John Ring Jr. I think there's a whole interesting story there. But anyway, yes, he did have a conviction for a sexual offense involving underage minors. This guy is not newly convicted. He got convicted, I believe, in 2010. So we're looking at this guy going on 13 years as a convicted sex offender, and all of a sudden he forgets to update his address right between two elections, right between the primary and the runoff. And oh, magically,
you know,
magically, he's connected with Lynn Hurtak's campaign as Mr. Scorch here from the Florida birdcage liner, Florida Politics, will tell you, oh, are there a connection? Oh, Democratic Socialist didn't work, and so now it's sex offender. And then you look at creative loafing. Colin Wolf seems to have stepped into the vacancy left by Mr. Garcia. So Colin Wolf is like, he opens his with Ybor City's Italian Club board chair arrested for failing to update sex offender information. And there's this big picture of the sex offender with Mayor Castor hugging up at some event. And also, another thing, this Jane Castor's birthday campaign celebration and kickoff, this is the gift that keeps on giving, right?
He's literally, literally listed on the host committee.
I mean, this is how we traced Hamburglar Blake Casper to her. And now, well, and of course, Nepo Mom, because she's number one on the chairs. And so now this registered sex offender is down in there, too, under the name of Gio Fucarino. And it's like, okay, wait. Some things here are looking fishy. Now, Lynn Hurtak, according to the Creative Loafing article, she said that Mayor Castor was the one who made the introduction to this dude. And, of course, Mayor Castor has zero recollection of introducing this person. And so, zero recollection and no, I did not, for those of you who don't know, are two entirely different things. I have no recollection is what you say when you can't deny it and you don't want to admit it. So
it's so enraging. One, just the injustice to journalism being done here. But at the same time, you know, that Florida Politics article is saying like, well, there's no money to going from Lynn's campaign to this guy as payment for consulting.
Right.
Yeah. They're still reporting it as like, they're basically reporting a rumor.
Yes.
But they won't report the fact that the same guy is actually listed, like a tangible thing, listed as a host committee member of the mayor's reelection campaign. Right. Like, I would say that's a bigger story.
It's huge, yeah. I mean, and if you look, go ahead.
I was just going to add, but knowing how Florida politics operates, when stuff like this comes up, Peter himself will say something like, well, I'm not a journalist, so, you know, like, and you will use that as a fallback. But will deceive the public into thinking, like, yeah, this is journalism, like, we're reporting good stuff.
Right.
They'll cover legislative things, legislative events and legislative session, but the people who spend more money on advertising will always get more coverage.
Yes.
That's just how it works.
Well, and if you look at his articles from when he was first talking about, oh, you know, Janet Cruz jumps in the race. And it's the articles are very slanted in a pro-Cruz fashion. So that tells me right there who's buttering his bread, you know? Donna, what do you think about all this?
I think that it's a measure of how sick the process has gotten and how it is stacked against the, you know,
everyday folks. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they keep saying that we need to become savvier consumers of the electoral product. But what I see is a situation where every time the electorate tries to step up its game, have a clearer understanding, lean into the process, they move the ball to the point where people are no longer showing up. You know,
right.
There are 120 million people in Tampa Bay. There are more than 120 million people. And 30,000 people in Tampa decided to show up for the Tampa election. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that the numbers were, I mean, we don't see presidential year numbers in a municipal election. We understand that. But it seems that, and there have been years where it's been higher, shockingly enough. But it's sending the message that no matter what you do, you can't win. What is it that from The Wiz, you can't win, you can't get out of the game, you can't get out of the game. You can't win, you can't do something,
right.
You can't get out of the game. And we're there. Like, you can't get out of the game. This is your country. These people are making decisions about your life. You can't win. People who are engaged show up to the polls. People like me and Amina, you know, we've made careers out of this from one angle or another. And then there's the people who go to the school board meetings. They're holding up the walls in these places every week. They're not getting anywhere. Gerrymandering took us to another level. So I have a lot of thoughts. You know, I don't want to ramble. But I think that the people, our listeners, understand what this is. And then underneath all of these things that are happening, there's the fleecing that's going on. The city is literally being given away to the highest bidder. And sometimes, in the case of the graveyard up on 22nd and MLK, to the lowest bidder.
Yeah. Our news director, Sean Kinane, points out that Florida politics is a news outlet that should be taken with a grain of salt. Their writers do good work, but it's worth noting that its publisher, Peter Scorch, sells advertisements to politicians and often offers them positive coverage in exchange. I can just guess who one of his major folks is from the
way. I mean, it's a glorified blog. That's all. And I would caution people, because not only is the, you know, not only are, like, I've been saying this forever, but I have myself witnessed that there is a lack of information going out to the public that is about these nuanced right bills. And it sometimes getting it out quickly takes priority over getting it out correctly.
Right.
And that's also something that really bothers me. But what I really want to say is that in addition to what Donna pointed out about the public being tired and you know, just tired and disengaged, the accessibility to running for office is accessible, right? People say that anyone can run for office. But look at like how this game is played, right? You got to spend the money on the advertisements. You got to get out there. You got to get your name out there. You have to raise an extreme amount of money just to be relevant if you are a newcomer. So it's not as accessible as people may make it seem.
Right.
You really do have to come with a bank account and connections. And on top of that, you have to make sure those connections don't include registered sex offenders, for God's sake. So, It's something to really, I would like to talk about this further. I think that we should keep bringing this up. I think everybody reading these stories really needs to pay attention to the accuracy of them and, you know, think critically. And I know that's a lot to ask for some people these days, but.
Well, what about the part where, people do what they're supposed to do and they can't get anywhere? Tyler Barrett, we never talked about Tyler, I think, because we understood from the beginning that he was going to be treated the way that he was. And so we probably should have talked more about him. So here we have a younger millennial candidate, a guy somewhere in his 30s, would have made a perfectly good representative. He would have been highly accessible to his constituents and done a decent job. Mm-hmm. He came into the race at the same time as others that I won't name, but they came with the connections and the money that Amina pointed to. Mm-hmm. And so they immediately became real players, although, in my humble opinion, would have been less capable of understanding budgets, of understanding legislation, would have been highly accessible, I believe, to their constituents, but just with less tools to navigate some of the complexities, right?
Right.
There's several reasons why I can't say that person's name, right? Because there will be blowback that's not real, right? Because I remember, I know these people, I've worked with these people. And so I have a good understanding of their aptitudes and capacities.
It's dirty. I don't know how y'all do it, honestly. Politics is dirty stuff, man.
I'll tell you how I do it.
I don't anymore.
The way that I do it is I stay in the field, right? Mm-hmm. I stay in the field. That sounds weird, but I'm just kidding. I stay in the field. And I work with people directly, young people that are trying to come up. Yes, I do build field plans for candidates. Yes, I do consult with candidates on the best options for their field operations. You all know that I work for a small firm in DC that we used to be a part of a very large firm that broke away. So lots of talent in the room, but my job mostly is to take young people, usually minorities, usually women. So lots of Black and Latin women and some guys. Mm-hmm. And train them on the entry-level jobs into field ops. And then based on their performance, continue to move them up until they become seasoned political operatives. We've done this to, I probably put about 10 kids in six-figure jobs right before the age of 25. Mm-hmm. So that's the way that I see my work. I don't see my work as a political operative, just raking in the cash, although that's a thing. Mm-hmm. I am mostly a mama, a den mother that raises up the kitties so that we can have different types of representation in these spaces.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's mind-boggling to me that somebody with as much name recognition as Janet Cruz has feels the need to put these negative things. I mean, it's like run a clean campaign, dang, you know, and get your people not to send out hit pieces about, you know, oh, well, she's a socialist. Whoa, she's got predators on her staff. Because people who don't know better, and thank goodness we have Creative Loafing, my gosh. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text to 813-433-0885. I've got some emails to read real quick, ladies. This one's from David. Hi, ladies. I was wondering if you'd consider adding a lady named Shirley to the show. Then you'd have Surly Shirley. Ha. Huh? And don't call me Shirley. I just wanted to let you know that I've shared the DeClantis nickname a few times on social media, and it always gets a very positive response. Pretty cool. Thanks for getting it started. Actually, Donna stole it from somebody in Jacksonville, and I stole it from Donna, and then now you have spread it to the masses. Thank you, David. one more thing. I wonder who's paying for DeClantis's campaign tour. Book tour. Are we the taxpayers paying for his travel? If so, that's shameful and shameless at the same time. Yes, we're pretty much doing whatever DeClantis wants nowadays, David, because he's got all the power and the votes up in Tallahassee. All right. So DeMarco says maggot attacks. Thomas Edwards, gay Sarasota County School Board member and lone Democrat in public school board meeting, turning event into a homophobic forum. People present that they could feel her waves of fear. Dang. And he sent some links to the, this is absolutely outrageous. Outrage. And, but this is what they're targeting is the school boards. If you look on social media, it's not hard to find a call for action to go attend school board meetings and start complaining about whatever is being proposed.
I mean, if you go back on our show alone, okay, let's say a year, let's go back a year. I think we were talking about that. You know, there was an active attack by the state, DeSantis administration, on school boards.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that, and we were saying how important it is to really amplify these local races so that we can at least keep the seats we have. And then look what happened recently. Hillsborough gets completely, you know, uprooted. Hillsborough School Board, City of Tampa, City Council, no one, like, people... because it's quote unquote a blue city or it's mostly Democrats, they don't care who's running. Like, they do not get involved until right after primaries, the party or these organizations that fund money and do grassroots campaigning. Nobody gets involved. And this is how you get like the most mediocre representatives.
Mm-hmm.
I have rarely, in the recent history, I haven't seen a grassroots campaign really. Maybe Lynn is the exception because she came from, she was kind of voted in or appointed. And
appointed,
then now
yeah.
is running, yeah, appointed, and now is running a somewhat grassroots campaign. But that doesn't exist anymore. They're letting, at least as far as the party goes, I thought there was like a municipal victory program where it exists. But have you heard anything about it? No. It's just enraging. It really is.
Yeah.
And the, I think, is it the Sarasota school board member that email mentioned?
Yes.
Yeah. They're targeting this one person and they're calling them like woke school board member is now a target.
Well, Jessica Vaughn was mentioned by name,
right,
by DeSantis because she apparently is his fly in the ointment. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. why are these people in government so threatened by people who want to bring a different voice?
You know, I think that we know, though. Like, don't we know if the reason that we had in the 60s, the Summer of Love and all of the accompanying efforts before and after came out, started in Berkeley. Why did it begin in Berkeley, right? Because Berkeley was a hotbed of progressive thought. These people were on the cutting edge, you know, of rethinking our government, rethinking our social systems, discussing the impact of our past, slavery, the ownership of women, private property, and who gets to be the owners of private property and the arbiters of law.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people were breaking down in Berkeley in the 60s. That created all of the things we couldn't touch, reefer madness. They were destroying these notions. Out of mm-hmm. that came an entire social revolution, an economic revolution, and all kinds of things, good and bad, right? Charles Manson, you know, a lot of people got a lot of ideas, but there was this new idea that we don't have to do things the way we've always done them. Our listeners are in the age group that they understand all of this. They were there for it. They were part of
right.
it. We have never had the type of liberal arts education in universities that we had before that time. Now, I've studied that. And so when you look and you see in the streets, thousands, millions of people marching across your country, shutting down your highways and byways, you know, taking their right to protest on our highways and byways for redress mm-hmm. for their grievances, which is what we saw starting after Trayvon Martin's killing, about a host of things. Let's go back to 2011, Zuccotti Park, Occupy Wall Street, all the Occupies that sprung up all over the country.
Right.
So when you have that type of activity in your streets,
civil unrest, challenges to your law, unprecedented cases going, making it to the Supreme Court, challenging the very bedrock of our racist, sexist, ableist, homophobic charters all over the country. Then you go after the schools, you go after the colleges, you go after the elementary schools. What we haven't seen before that's different now is that these folks are going after kids in almost babes in arms.
Right.
They're not just going after college students. They're trying to stop this thinking. And it's because of the internet revolution and the proliferation of information, unprecedented proliferation of information, that they have to attack these structures where they can. They can't control the TikTok, they can't control Instagram, can't control Facebook, Twitch. They can't control these social media outlets. So they're looking to control the education that kids are getting, indoctrinate them from day one. That's what this is all about.
And right. It's working.
Yeah. Well, and this is what needs to happen. Let's talk to Marsha real quick because she's been hanging on a few minutes. Hi, Marsha.
Hi. Just a real quick thing here. With all this like anti-woke stuff, I say we take our woke pride and we shove it in their face and we make T-shirts that say woke pride, proud to be woke, rather be woke than a joke. Make all sorts of little fun slogans with it.
Marsha. Stickers, got a little dead air there.
Social media.
Do we have any more emails?
Wait, she's talking. I can hear her. Okay. I don't know why you guys
Hello?
Can't. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Okay.
I was saying just real quick about the anti-woke thing that's been going on for too long. We should just take our woke pride and put it on T-shirts and bumper stickers like woke pride, proud to be woke, rather be woke than a joke, like all sorts of like cool stuff to show that we're proud to be this way. We don't want to be any other way but woke. And if we just like everybody kind of come out and show that pride against this racism and anti LGBTQIA plus community, like et cetera, like let's make it a prideful thing and show it in our numbers and just tell them like this is disgusting and it's not acceptable.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for calling, Marsha. So that was what Marsha touched on. She's like, you know, let's take woke and just make it proliferating with T-shirts and stuff like that, with slogans like woke, you know, woke, I own woke. I would say woke AF. But anyway, she basically what Marsha is saying is we need to own it and display it just to show the sheer numbers of folks who are woke. And so,
well, I would say we did own it, and that was the issue. They caught on, and by they meaning everyone who is against diversity and.
Right.
Essentially, at the end of the day, it's racism. Like, they're racist. People who are racist
right.
are going to have an issue with the word woke. And us owning it, right, those of us on this side where we're pro-diversity, like pro-inclusion, us owning it is not going to, clearly hasn't done much. And I feel like saying that, even just saying that is a little performative. Or it could turn out to be performative because we've seen that happen too, right? Like then you put the word on shirts and sell shirts.
Right. And then
who does that money go to? Things like that.
Oh, it all comes back to money, doesn't it? God. Okay. So
always.
DeAndre is on the phone. Hi, DeAndre.
Hey, good morning. I got a couple things I wanted to discuss. One is about art, and I think the prior caller kind of leaned into it a little bit. Already, and it's like, you know, it started off like it's propaganda, probably at the beginning of this, you know, the founding of the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it eventually, aside from propaganda, became satirical. So, it was a benefit. It caught people's eye. I don't think I see that as much as far as with newspapers. And that was, with anyone, is what brings them to newspapers. I mean, you know, you had Garfield and the bunch, and then of course some satire. And that said, the other point I wanted to bring up is this is all a cover up, man. This is why they're going after the schools. Schools before Facebook, before Instagram, before the TikTok and all of that, were the places that collected people's information and held on to it for generations.
Yeah.
And there's information in schools from K through 12, and then that match that with white pages and yellow pages, okay? And then you have a way to, like, uncover a lot as far as history is concerned. And no people more than the African-American community have been victimized so tremendously institutionally, cross-sector and across institutions. So if you want to know why these kids sag or they don't have dads and this and that, you can go to that information. But now the Republicans are trying to get a hold of all of that information and probably burn it. Okay, as soon as they cover colleges, I mean, nothing has been more revealing than this whole thing about these different graveyards. Coincidentally, one at the Italian Club. coincidentally, by the way.
Yeah, coincidentally, yeah.
I'm kind of going to stop there because I'm driving and I got to focus. But I just had to say that, you know, and get some satire back out there. It might be helpful. Get some artists and, you know, put up a post who has the best to kind of express what's going on. Heck, I draw.
That's another side hustle for you, DeAndre.
Absolutely. I'm looking at the Florida Sentinel, as a matter of fact. As soon as I can settle down and make some money and, you know, with this stuff, it's starting to get ridiculous. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We have Chris in Tampa. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks so much. Always just a big fan of your show, and you cover such important things, and I am really grateful for this language of waking up and being awake. Henry David Thoreau and a lot of great American history with the idea of waking up, and I do think that's important and appropriate, and your show helps us all to wake up. And my comment is, don't forget about the greatest American power, which is our power of love to our fellow neighbors, and let's let our lives be our message. Language can trigger people. It's very hard to always use the right language with everyone, so just let's let our actions be the love that shows people, and I think that love is what's going to wake those other folks up, and that hopefully they'll be brought on board. I have a really large, diverse family, and my experience is that you just got to show up, you know, show up at every little event you can when you have people that you think you might be able to make some progress with to help them understand the importance of the history, the importance of helping people who are vulnerable or who historically really were mistreated. But just when you find these people in your lives, you think you might be able to move them just a centimeter, just show up in their lives, just love them, the power of love. It's very underrated as a long-term weapon. So keep on using it and keep up your show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chris. All right. Now we've got Monty in Tampa. Hi, Monty.
Hey there. Thank you for having me on. Long-time listener, Tampa native, Florida native. I guess I want to maybe latch on a little bit to the prior caller and really all the things that are going on. They're tough. They're bad. They're negative. I think the 1,000-foot view is important to keep in context. Overall, the good side, the progressive side, is winning. And you look at it from a long-term, big-picture perspective, you know, things are moving in the right direction. I have young boys. I see their idealism. I see their, you know, open-mindedness. And, yes, what DeSantis and Trumpism and all these negative things in our society are doing are making a little impact, but I think long-term, when we talk about them winning or them making, you know, fundamental changes in school policy and other things, they're trying. I think, you know, 100 years from now, you'll look back, and these are some of the loud, frantic, desperate battle cries of a losing minority in our society. And kids nowadays, most of them, they get it. Unless they're homeschooled and truly isolated from good progressive thoughts and ideas. They get it. Teachers get it. Our education system gets it. We're going to win this ultimately.
All right, Monty. Well, what are we doing in the meantime? Because it's kind of sucking right now.
It is. And listen, keep up the good fight. It's not to say we put our tools away and go cultivate farms, right? I'm saying keep up the good fight. But, you know, I wanted to kind of bring this message to the show just to help people keep their heads up and realize that the fight's worth happening. But if you're feeling lost or in despair or that, you know, things are dark and it's only getting darker, that's where I would argue. I would say, no, we're on the side of light, and light's going to shine forward, and it's going to continue to shine brightly. So keep that in your back pocket. Keep that in your soul and your heart, letting you know that you're on the right side in historical context. And ultimately, we're doing what's right, and things are moving in the right direction. It can be hard to see that on a day-in and day-out basis or when the bad, negative stuff makes the headlines, because it will. And that's never changed. It's never going to change. But ultimately, when I think of the youth culture and I think of young kids, whether elementary, high school, and beyond, I know quite a few in that space. There's not a lot that have blinders on, head down, you know, thinking bad things that Trump or DeSantis or anybody else has inspired them. Most are open, loving, wonderful young people that believe in doing good in the world.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for the uplifting message, and thank you for calling. And we hope to hear from you again on future shows.
Thank you for
the call. So can I say something about that?
You want? Yes.
So when I think about people who came of age at the turn of the century, maybe 1918, 1920, and I think about the Spanish flu, World War One, which there was the war, and then at the end of the war, the soldiers brought Spanish flu home, mm-hmm. And so then a lot of children died of Spanish flu. So a lot of adults that, you know, people had children a lot younger. So you were 25 years old and all four of your seven kids died of, well, that's a lot of kids for 25. But so a few of your kids died of Spanish flu. Then you think you're going to get your bearings, and then the Great Depression hits. As soon as the Great Depression is over, right? Then World War II. Where we literally came close to a one world order and the destruction of sovereign states, a lot of sovereign states that could have happened, right? So imagine a world where Nazis took over the world, right? Like there's a show, I think, on Netflix, one of those Showtime or Stars, where the Nazis actually took over the world and they ran it.
Right? Yeah, the man in the high tower or something like
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yes. And so that was a real thing that almost happened. A lot of the allied nations were asleep at the wheel until they realized that it was real. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you think about someone who lived and died, just imagine, and then you went off, you were the greatest generation, and then you went off to war and lost a limb or your mind, as it were. It was a very horrible war. A lot of people died, like a million people, right, worldwide. So when you think about that, we have to understand that we're moving in the right direction, and we may not see. We may be planting trees, the shade of which we will never enjoy. And so we have to keep that in mind as we work, because people lose faith because they expect to see outcomes in their lifetime. I think we have to be very clear, we who do this work, that we will not see the seeds that we're planting in our lifetime. Our grandchildren may not see it, right? Because now we have the rise of AI, and it's going to present an entire host of problems to an already, we have a bioethical challenges that we're already facing. Racism, homophobia, sexism, misogyny, misogynoir are in full swing. And then we introduce AI into that. We're already seeing that the AI has brought all of those biases into the fold. They're in AI, right?
Right.
Because the AI is drawing from the internet and the public mind, public discourse. So we got a lot of problems. People just need to become acquainted with the notion that don't lose hope, because you will, in all likelihood, not see these changes that you're seeking to make in your or your children's grand lifetimes.
I feel like what you're asking people to do is think about more than just themselves.
Yeah, how's that working out for us, Donna?
Right, and with the way, you know, America's set up, which we talk about all the time, I mean, that's why individualism is promoted. That's why it's just become harder to have a community. This is just, it goes back to that. Because why would someone, they're like, I don't care because I'm not going to reap these benefits anyway. So, you know, this is essentially what you're asking. And that is a big ask these days.
Well, and you think about, you think about the shifting standards in the country. It's like, you know, Republicans are supposed to be the party of little government, and yet they're controlling women's bodies every single day. There's a new piece of legislation every time. I mean, women are not going to have any rights by the time it's over with, and it's really disconcerting. And then you have a president, a sitting president, incite an insurrection, and absolutely nothing happens.
So Liz sent out an article this morning that was in the Washington Post. If you have any articles left, you may want to check it out. It's about depression, sexual assault, and suicidal ideation of teen girls.
Right.
Now, I saw that. Oh,
yeah.
I'll
put a link to the to it on the Surly Voices page.
So y'all listen, when you think about social media, the rise and the accessibility of plastic surgery, with all these unreal filters, unattainable images for a girl of 14 or 12 or 11, teenagers start at 9. Amina can probably speak to that. Teenagers start at 9. They're no tweens. They go right into, is something wrong with my nose?
Right.
So, which usually would happen to girls when they actually got serious about dating, right? So when I thought about it, it made sense. Now, that came rather early for me because I'm a night owl. But last night, when I was up at 4 a.m., I found an article that said that Black women exhibit symptoms of depression differently, that paralysis, inability to get out of bed, inability to experience pleasure. Mostly they were just directing that towards in sexual activity. The need to still show up. And so when I read that as a Black woman, I recognized that in myself and others. And I thought to myself, it's because Black women have their depression has to be mobile,
right?
You don't get to stop. No one's coming. Black men aren't going to do it. White people aren't going to do it. You're at the bottom of the pecking order and you're on your own. I think these girls are experiencing something akin to that. And the beauty standards, they showed some girls that look to be Southwest Asian. Beauty standards, sexual assault, boys, as much as we've run this Me Too movement, we haven't penetrated the public mind around the double standard that still stands. The girls were complaining that boys were sexually assaulting them and not being disciplined for it, and they had to stay in the class with them. 13-year-old girls were being bullied and had a breakup and actually unalived herself. So there are so many things that kids are facing. That's the other side of don't worry, be happy.
Right.
Right. They're facing an impossible mountain to climb. And no one's talking about these staggering numbers. You guys really should read that article. And if you have granddaughters, you have nieces, spend time with them, talk to them. A lot of these girls openly admit that they're not talking to their parents and
right.
their friends. Of the things that are bothering them. That's what leads to these types of outcomes.
And then also, one big part of the problem with these girls was that they would report the assaults and were not believed. Mm. And that is a tale as old as time, honey, because that has been going on. And I'm surprised and astonished that it still goes on today with all the publicity about sexual assault and things like that.
This is why everything for me goes back to children and how we are raising, I mean, we, because I see myself as part of like a collective, like we all have a responsibility to the children in this world.
Yes.
But that for me, I mean, that's probably the most important thing. Like, who's on these front lines? They're teachers. So we need to fund the teachers, fund the schools, you know, everything that they're trying to tear apart. And by they, I mean, in the our case, Florida government.
Yeah.
And they feel the same way you do. It's all about the children.
Right. They want to quote unquote save the children. They want these girls to be subservient and just hand it on over to the boys. I mean, these girls have gotten out of hand, Amina.
the same talking points are being used to spin a different narrative.
It's, right.
And just draw a different conclusion, and I understand, and I have a lot of sympathy for why the public is so confused and disillusioned.
Men across the board are fighting for the right to ownership of women's bodies and minds.
Yep.
And the wealthy across the board are fighting for the ownership of people's bodies and labor and intellectual products.
Yep.
It's happening everywhere. This regressivism movement is a very real thing, which is why I don't tell people don't worry, be happy, because we can find ourselves back in the 1930s.
Oh, people sure.
Yeah. That was a hard life.
Yeah. And it's, well, yeah, I don't see anything turning this tide except like mass revolution. But then again, nobody's got the time to attend a revolution because they're all working, and it's like.
And well, I want to just give people, you know, because sometimes if you get far into this rabbit hole, you know, we're gonna get off this show and then leave people with like, damn, what the hell are we gonna do? The sky's really falling. But as far as the municipal election, just to bring it back, because that's what we're being told to
yes,
do.
Yes, we are. Dealing with
we are being told to get hyper local essentially and to focus on what we can control. And I think that's a good thing because we do have power there at least.
Right.
And I think we have power, period. But when you see tangible, it's hard to see tangible results on a large scale sometimes. So what I wanted to leave people with was the deadlines for the municipal runoff. And the runoff, you know, the turnout for the municipal election was what, less than, I can't remember the exact number. I don't want to throw one off the top of my head, but it wasn't good.
It wasn't great.
The runoff turnout is going to be even worse. So the deadline to register is March 27th, if you haven't yet. The deadline to request your vote by mail ballot is April 15th. Early voting starts April 17th until the 23rd, and then election day is April 25th. Please remember those dates and then do what you need to do.
To be clear, I was not advocating that we all get out and revolt right now. That's something we have to plan.
I am.
We got to plan that a little bit better.
Go. But people need to understand the circumstances so that they can understand that it is important that they act.
Right. All right. So Frank's given us the finger and it's time to wrap it up. So thank you for joining us today. Please tune in next week for another edition of Surly Voices here on WMNF Tampa 88.5.
I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing. I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks. I like going to the Tula, I put rocks all in my watch. I like texts from my exes when they want a second chance. I like proving wrong, I do what they say I can. They call me Cardi, Cardi, banging body, spicy mommy.
I'm Corva Coleman. The CEO of video sharing app TikTok is facing many questions in a congressional hearing this morning. The U.S. government has warned the Chinese-owned company is subject to Chinese laws, and it could be forced to share American users' data with the Chinese government.